Welcome to the Face Podcast. This week's episode,
From Instant Image to Lasting Lore, The Radical Narrative Pivot of the Face and the Genius of the 3D Library Shelf.
Here are your hosts, Evelyn Facey and Darius Ansicht.
So for months, we've seen the face, you know, this icon, mostly living in a pretty visual world.
Yeah, lots of noise, chaos, parody, satire, that kind of immediate visual hit.
Exactly. But today, we're doing something different. We're turning the page, you could say.
Literally.
Right, literally. We're moving into the book section on the site. It's a totally different space. Quieter, needs more time.
And that's the core of what we're looking at here, this conceptual pivot. It's pretty radical.
Oh, so?
Well, think about it. The face has been like a logo, an image you just get instantly, a visual punchline.
Right.
So our mission, really, is to figure out how the creator takes that simple, which is so visual and modern, and shifts it successfully into, well, long-form stories.
Into narrative.
Exactly. We're looking at what the Thorse calls a vast collection of fictional writing, and importantly, how it's all presented. It's quite innovative.
It really feels like a different kind of engagement they're asking for. The creator even says, you know, the face always lived in the visual world, but this time it's stepping onto the page.
Which is a big step.
Yeah.
Moving from being seen in a flash to being, well, read slowly.
And maybe the most interesting part, for an icon that supposedly means nothing, building this huge body of lore, these stories around it, that feels deliberately contradictory, doesn't it? Almost beautiful and how counterintuitive it is.
Definitely something to unpack there.
Okay, so let's dive into the content itself. What is in this book section?
Well, it's not just a text dump. It's framed as a curated archive, specifically of fictional writing.
Fictional, okay.
And each story seems designed to build this.
Yeah.
Let's call it an official mythology. It explores a different side, myth, or memory of the face.
So they're actively constructing a backstory, a lore.
Seems like it. Okay. Witnessing the intentional buildup of its foundation, you could say.
And how is it presented? You mentioned that was innovative.
Ah, yes. This is crucial. It's housed in what they call the Library Shelf 3D.
Library Shelf 3D. Okay.
And it's not just like a background image. It's fundamental to the whole experience. It tries to bring back a sense of reverence, maybe, tactility, to reading online.
How does that work in practice?
Well, imagine if they just link to a PDF, right?
Yeah. Standard stuff. Feels flat.
Exactly. Flat. Maybe a bit disposable. But here, each story is presented as a physical-looking object, a digital book sitting on this virtual shelf.
Okay.
And you, the reader, you have to select it. But then you can actually rotate and zoom into the book itself.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, like you're browsing someone's private library, handling a rare volume.
So you interact with the container before you even get to the text.
Precisely. It forces you to see the digital file not just as data, but as an object, an artifact.
That's where that idea comes in, right? The story becomes sculpture concept. Yeah,
exactly. They're trying to make reading feel tactile again, even through a screen.
We do forget that books are physical objects, don't we?
You do.
So by giving these digital stories a 3D form, something you have to virtually handle, turn over, look at before opening.
It elevates the perceived value.
Yeah.
It makes the text inside feel more significant somehow.
It's a neat paradox, isn't it? Using digital tech to simulate physicality. The shelves may be digital, but the words are alive.
Mm-hmm. It underlines the investment needed from the reader, too.
What do you mean?
Well, reading a story, especially one exploring the myth of the face, takes commitment, time, attention.
Right. It's not a quick glance like an image.
Exactly. And to really appreciate how bold this shift in narrative is, you kind of have to compare it to the other stuff the face does.
Yeah.
Really instant, low commitment material.
Good point. That contrast is probably key to understanding the whole project.
I think so.
Okay. So if the book section is this sort of introspective, internal dive into the myth, what's the opposite end of the spectrum?
Well, you could look at the art section. That's wildly external, very tied to specific moments in time.
Ah, the art parodies.
Right. Yeah, where the face basically photobombs art history. It inserts itself into everything from 8,000 BCE Lascaux cave paintings all the way up to, like, 2019 Maurizio Catalan.
So that's all about immediate visual recognition, right? Parody, a bit of historical commentary.
Instantaneous. The insight, the joke, it lands in a second. You don't need to read 10,000 words to get it.
Okay, so that's one contrast. What else?
How about the cookbook?
Oh, yeah, the cookbook. That felt like peak absurdity.
Totally. It's the face purely as a visual gag. It becomes an edible face.
Like on fried chicken or ravioli or that spaghetti with tomatoes.
Exactly. And the source even notes that while recipes were considered, the focus ultimately stayed on the visuals.
So no deep narrative meaning there.
Not at all. Just immediate visual, maybe even a little lowbrow fun.
Yep.
A photo and a laugh. No story needed.
All right, so we have the deep myth building in books, the quick visual parody in art, the pure visual absurdity in cookbook. What about the wine section? That felt different again.
Oh, definitely. That operates on a whole other level. It uses language, but in a really sharp, satirical way.
It's kind of highbrow commercialism, but then undercut.
Exactly. It's satire aimed squarely at pretension, you could say.
How does it do that?
Language is the weapon.
Mm-hmm.
The face gets branded as this luxury wine, right? But then you read the tasting notes.
Ah, yes, the descriptions, they're brutal.
Savagely so. They completely undermine the whole fancy setup. It's like a meta critique of consumerism, luxury marketing, the works.
Can you give an example? I remember they were pretty cutting.
Sure. Take the face, red blend, California, luxury price, looks fancy. The description, California's identity crisis. Jammy, oak, desperation.
Desperation. That's not your typical tasting note.
Not quite. It's like an instant editorial just slashing through the pretense. And it's, what, $123 a bottle?
And didn't they use an AI to write those? Claude?
Yeah. Which just adds this whole other fascinating layer.
How so?
It gives the critique this feeling of cold, algorithmic honesty, almost detached.
Yeah.
Like the AI is just observing and stating the uncomfortable truth about the human element, the desperation, the sketchiness.
So an AI critiquing human failings through the lens of wine marketing.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's pretty clever. And yeah. Clever and cutting is how the source describes those AI-generated notes.
Okay, let's contrast that kind of language, that immediate, sharp linguistic takedown,
yeah,
with the language in the book section,
yeah,
which is doing the opposite, right? It's slow, careful construction,
yeah,
building a world.
Absolutely. Worlds apart. Think about phase one, red wine, Napa.
Uh-huh.
The description points out the sketchy blue crayon portrait on the label.
Right.
And then just calls it overpriced, bold, expensive, sketchy, yeah, boom, instant satire.
Whereas the books ask you to suspend disbelief, to invest time, to actually care about the fabricated story.
Exactly. The wine section uses pretension against itself. The book section asks you to drop the cynicism and engage sincerely with a made-up history. It really shows the incredible range of this icon.
So pulling back then, when we talk about the dimensional space of the face,
mm-hmm,
it's not just the 3D shelf for the books, is it?
No, not at all. It's bigger than that.
It's more about the conceptual space it occupies, its ability to function across all these wildly different modes.
I think that's exactly right. From being a thing you can virtually touch the 3D book,
to being a quick visual joke in the art tea section,
to the sharp satire in the wine descriptions,
and then back to pure contemplative story in the books.
Yeah. That's the real dimension here, its capacity to be all those things.
And if the creator really wants the face to be this universally recognizable icon.
Yeah, that's the stated goal.
Then understanding this narrative dimension, this ability to hold stories, feels absolutely crucial.
It does. An icon can't just be a fleeting image or a joke forever, can it? It needs some kind of history, some depth, even if it's fictional, to feel permanent.
Doesn't that bring us back to the paradox you mentioned earlier?
The meaning nothing paradox.
Yeah. If the ultimate goal is an icon that means nothing, then why create this huge, engaging, fictional world around it? These myths, these memories. Isn't that deliberately giving it meaning?
That's the core tension, isn't it? Are they accidentally, or maybe purposefully, undermining the meaninglessness by rooting it so deeply in narrative?
It feels like they're creating the very meaning they claim to avoid. Giving this blank canvas a really rich backstory.
Or perhaps the meaninglessness is the meaning and the lore just explores the absurdity of trying to pin meaning onto it. It's slippery.
It is. But what we've clearly seen is the face making this seamless jump from just being a visual symbol
to becoming a subject of narrative myth, a story.
Offering all these different ways for you, the audience, to engage cynically with the wine.
Or maybe reverently. Carefully with the 3D books.
The lore definitely gives the symbol a kind of staying power, doesn't it?
For sure. More than the instant hit of the art parodies or the cookbook gag. Parody fades. Myth tends to stick around.
Okay, so here's something to maybe leave our listeners with, a final thought to chew on. By making the audience slow down for the book section, by making them virtually handle the narrative, invest in this constructed history, isn't the creator basically ensuring the face outlasts its initial burst of visual absurdity? The stories in those digital books might be labeled fictional myths, memories, but maybe the narrative meaning they create, the sense of history and depth they give the icon, maybe that meaning ends up being profoundly real and lasting after all.